So we're going to talk about music rights now. As I was saying a little bit earlier on, I don't know if you realise, but every time we play a song on the radio, we have to pay royalties every time that song is performed in public, say by a band, in front of an audience. They would have to pay a fee to copyright holders. It could be the composer, it could be a bigger company. And on the radio, we also pay fees to the recording companies as well. Let's find out a little bit more about this. We thought, hearing the news that David Bowie's entire body, his entire body of works has been sold for £180 million. Wow. We thought we might get Michael Infante on the line because he's the CEO of One Media IP Group, who've overseen deals with the likes of Take That, Heatwave and Culture Club, to name a few. And recently the group have managed to get rights to Don Williams' entire back catalogue as well. And I'm pleased to say that Michael is on the line now. Morning to you, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I hope it's a nicer day over there in Jersey than it is here in foggy London.
Oh, yeah, it's foggy, isn't it? I was looking at the weather maps before we came on. Yeah, I think most of us are getting it. Our weather forecast isn't too bad today, and we have had quite a bit of sunshine as well, and we're going to get some more today. So probably we've got the better. You've got the short straw today by the sound of it, Michael. Right, let's talk about music rights, because we heard that story in the last week or so that David Bowie's entire body of works has been sold for an alleged 180 million pounds by his estate. So who gets what when songs are performed in public?
Well, there's several different rights streams, as you mentioned earlier. The rights that are publishing, the rights that are streaming, the rights that are radio play are all divided into a variety of different pockets, if you like, and collected by a variety of different owners. So the artist himself will collect the PPL, which is when radio plays a track, you pay a fee for that. There is the sync rights. If a track is used in a commercial, and then that would go through usually a broker to a record label and eventually split between the guys that write the music and play the music. And then, of course, there's the rights that are collected by streaming on the Spotify, Amazons, and Apple Music Store. So it's a complicated story in who owns what. On the David Bowie, Warners had acquired last year half of the rights on a variety of different collections. I mean, this time now, they've just sort of bought the other half. But of course, poor David doesn't benefit out of this, but his estate does, and obviously any of his successors that were in his will or otherwise would be benefactors of the money that have been paid.
And you yourself have overseen deals like this, haven't you?
We have, yes. We've made a lot of acquisitions. We're a small public company listed on the AIM market on the stock exchange. We've spent $15 million in the last couple of years acquiring rights that you mentioned earlier, production rights, producer rights from Take That, a couple of songs from Take That, A Million Love Songs was one of them. We've acquired the Don Williams Country and Western catalog. We've acquired the Kid Creole and the Coconuts, Annie, I'm Not Your Daddy, and a couple of other tracks with him. And, of course, the Culture Club and the Heatwave tracks. So, yes, we're a very busy, prolific company in acquiring. And, of course, onward royalties are often paid even after acquisition. So sometimes it isn't the 100% sellout that people would think.
All right. So let's take one of those as an example, A Million Love Songs, Take That. So if I were, I don't know, if I was to play that on my show, we would, as we've been saying, be liable to pay the royalties on that. How would that all be split up?
That's a really good question. So the way it would be split up is who was in the original contract to receive royalties from day one. So there would have been a producer, and it is the producer rights that we brought out, a prolific producer called Ian Levine. There would then be the record label. He was on EMI back in those days, so EMI would be a reciprocant. You've got the writers of the song. Can't remember the writers of Million Love Songs. Barry Manilow, whoever, I can't remember now. They'll be corrected on that one, won't they? And then, of course, a variety of contractual obligations. So it's a ball of string, and companies like us, when we buy the rights to songs, we will select a particular right that we want to buy. Unless, of course, we did this with a very, very fantastic contemporary piano player called Philip Wesley, one of the larger acquisitions we did 2 years ago, where we bought all the rights out. We bought out the performing rights, we bought out the publishing, we bought out the whole thing. So at that point there, we are the collector. the only right that he would maintain is, of course, public performance. If he goes out and plays records, actually in concerts, etc., well, of course, then that's straight to the artist.
It sounds very complicated to me. And at the other end of the scale, we on this show have discovered, it was Gary Barlow who wrote the song, by the way, Million Love Songs, I just looked it up. Sony BMG, the record company, I've got the record company number here, and the publisher. People don't realise that every time I played it on the radio, I have to submit that information, don't I, as well?
Yeah, you will fill in a log, I'm guessing. The BBC is on a very comprehensive system. And, of course, depending on the listenership, i.e. how many listeners you would have and it's estimated, you pay different fees. So local radio would pay, for instance, a different fee to if Radio 1 or Radio 2 play, because obviously they've got much bigger audiences. And this goes right the way down to as you walk into a pub and music is being played in a pub, what you now have is that pub has to have a PRS or a PPL license. They would pay an annual fee. That's collected by societies and eventually divided up amongst the copyright owners. And there's some fantastic software now that's floating around whereby it can begin to automatically collect data and information, digitally report it back to societies like the PPL. So the right bands, even locally now, start collecting the money. Even if it's only pennies, they start getting paid.
Yeah, and that has been a bone of contention on the show. We've had artists on before. We have a lot of local music in the Channel Islands. We feature it a lot in our programmes. And many of those have been explaining to me on this show that it's very difficult to earn a living out of getting your music played, wherever that might be.
Well, that's right. And once they get their product up onto one of the digital stores, if we think about Spotify, we think of Amazon, etc., they, of course, can track it. We ourselves as a company have a software package called TCAT, which does actually track for artists and owners where product is being, content is being played. And, there are 205 territories globally, let alone, as we talk about, individual pubs and clubs and where they might be performing. Yes, for small bands, it is a problem tracking where their royalties may be. But it's getting better as the world goes digital. It's a lot more transparent than it was, say, 20 years ago.
Okay, then, so back to you and your company. You've been telling us of the rights that you've been purchasing. How do you decide which rights you're going to try and buy?
It's usually by introduction. You have to have a willing buyer and a willing seller. So we have a small panel at our office that will decide targets, but then we also have 30 years of experience working within the industry. So it's a very discreet approach because you never know who may or may not wish to be a seller. And, of course, some sellers, when they do sell, really don't want the publicity that they have sold. So it does become a very discreet service. You move within the inner circles. We're very fortunate to have a strong board of directors that are very music industry, I suppose we would say experienced. And it is by introduction. So once we get that intro, we then talk gently. We have a product called Harmony IP that they can sell all the rights or partially some of the rights, a little bit like asset release in your house. You can actually release some rights or some income, or you can release them all. So it is very much a personal service that we would offer in acquisition.
Right, okay then. So there was networking speaks volumes by the sound of it on what you do. And there was me thinking that there'd be some sort of sealed offers system whereby, interested parties will put in their sealed bids and the highest bidder would get it.
I'm not aware of any of those just yet going that way. Who knows to say what that'll go in the future? But no, it tends to be very much a negotiation because there is a lot of due diligence that has to be done when you actually make an acquisition. You've got to look at where the income streams are coming from. As I said earlier, you've got over 205 territories to audit to make sure that the streams are coming in from all the stores. There are over 600 digital stores that we would work with. So there's a lot of homework behind these things, and the deals aren't done overnight.
Wow, well, it's fascinating stuff. Obviously, you can't tell me exactly, but have you got your eyes on any particular things at the moment? You're working on stuff?
We have a strong pipeline. Christmas and the pandemic has actually you know, put us all back a little bit, I think, because physical meetings have been quite difficult to hold. However, I think when we look at what we're buying, and I think, you know, if you think about the Bowie acquisitions, it tends to be artists of a certain age. We look at the legacy of the way the income streams come in. So you may have income streams that are 20, 30, 40 years old. We're more attracted to that rather than, say, a brand new artist is just breaking, because what we don't know is, you know, the longevity, for instance, of a new artist when he releases or she releases tracks. So always the target for us is going to be artists from the 60s, 70s and early 80s. That's our hot spot. That's where we look.
Rightio. And just one other thing I wanted to ask you about, and we did touch on it, or you mentioned it a little bit earlier on. When pop songs, I'm thinking particularly here of Queen, are used in adverts on national television, and presumably that generates quite a bit of income.
Yeah, synchronisation rights are a little bit like a lottery win for record rights owners and artists. When somebody's making a film, you never know what the director or the music supervisor has in mind to accompany a particular scene in a film. So what you end up then doing is you can't really pitch as such. What happens is they choose. So they'll pick a piece of music and then it's a negotiation. We have one of the largest classical music libraries called Point Classics, which is used an awful lot in Disney, Marvel and a variety of different films. When you want something from a classical pop record and it's Queen, well, of course, or Elton John or any of those tracks, they kind of name the fee. They will decide whether they want to be associated with that film, that product or otherwise. And it's very much an open negotiation dealt with by managers and record labels and the advertiser.
Yeah, it seems to be an awful lot of Queen tracks used, though, on adverts.
Seems to be an all set again.
It's an awful lot of Queen tracks seem to be used in adverts.
Well, at the moment, on the back of the success of the movie, you didn't hear a lot of Elton John stuff before Rocket Man came out. We even heard Beatles tracks being used more recently, which up until a few years ago, you never heard Beatles tracks being used. So, yes, you can bank on the fact that if an album or a record has been used in a film or has got popularity or an anniversary. This is now 40 years this year of the anniversary of the breakup of The Jam. I would expect we might even hear some Paul Weller appearing in films, etc. this year.
All right, well, what's this space? Michael, fantastic talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome, and I love Jersey. I used to work there in the 80s. I was in the food industry back then and used to deliver to a lot of the old LaRiche stores. I don't know if they're all still going over there.
Oh, I'm not sure now. Okay, good to talk to you, Michael. Thank you so much. I'll tell you what, let's line the coffers of Warner Chappell a little bit more, shall we? They've just bought the rights to the David Bowie catalogue. This is China Girl.